This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Greg Dunn. How are you, Greg?
Very well, thank you, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. We're in sunny East Sussex and Plumpton College.
We are.
You're the new man who's taking over from Chris Foss.
Yes, I'm now head of the wine division, and I suppose the official title is Curriculum Manager Wine.
That sounds actually slightly painful, actually.
It does involve a bit of administration.
Yeah.
Some people find that painful.
Yeah, no. By your accent, you're clearly not an Englishman. You're an Aussie.
West Sussex. No, I'm from Australia.
And where did you grow up in Australia?
I grew up in Melbourne, so in Victoria, rural Victoria to start with, but my high school, university, PhD were all in Melbourne.
Okay, and you've got a PhD, so does that mean you're a winemaker here? Or
no, I'm not a winemaker here. I'm a plant scientist, so my PhD is in botany, so I'm a botanist. I just happen to have worked with grapevines for 20-odd years now.
Yeah, botany, so... I think we were talking earlier, you said you were involved in forestry to start off with.
Yeah, no, I started life as post-PhD. I did a postdoc in forest hydrology, and then I spent 5 years working in native forest research and plantation forest research in Queensland, which took me to some fantastic parts of the world.
What's forest hydrology? It sounds like something to do with water.
It is. Forest hydrology is exactly what you said. It's to do with... the water that flows through a forest, so it's to do with how much water catchments yield, how you manage those catchments, how you maintain water quality in those catchments. The particular project I was looking at was as a forest ages, does it yield more or less water? So I was looking at what happens as a stand of trees ages in terms of providing water to that catchment.
Oh, okay.
And those catchments used to supply Melbourne.
And do they provide more water or less water as they get older?
Well, the particular forest type I was working in was a mountain ash forest, so they're very tall trees, very tall eucalypts. They can get up to 85 metres tall.
Yeah.
So it happens to be the tallest flowering plant in the world, second tallest tree in the world.
Yep.
As those forests age from, say, 50 years through to about 400 years, they will yield more water.
Okay.
So as the trees thin out and as the understory changes, you will get a higher water yield from older forests.
Oh, okay. So the water flows.
There's probably less leaf area to transpire that water.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty important thing, because when you have a forest stand, you can leave it alone or you can harvest the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we worked out at the end of it that it's actually... It's more economic to keep those stands as they are, because the water is worth more than the timber.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? That is interesting. But then when did you move into viticulture?
Oh, late 90s. Yep. I moved from Queensland back to Victoria, and I moved into a position in viticulture for a state government department.
Mm-hmm.
So working on yield forecasting, yield development projects. It was all about the yield of a grapevine, how you manage it, how you predict it.
Yep.
So that's when I came back into viticulture. I stayed with the department for a while. I moved around a bit in terms of projects, but I eventually went to work for Melbourne Uni, where I was Associate Professor of Viticulture for a while. And before I came to England, I was Deputy Director of the National Grape and Wine Centre in Wagga.
That's the thing about Australia. They've got such great names, Wagga Wagga. And
yeah, Wagga Wagga. It's Wagga Wagga. It means place of many crows.
Okay.
So I suppose Wagga Wagga might mean crow crow, but that's the indigenous language or the native dialect. It's place of many crows.
I had a look at, I was doing a wine tasting last night and for a bunch of Kiwis and Australian accountants. And one of the questions I gave them was, what's the Aboriginal name for Coonawarra?
Coonawarra?
Coonawarra. Do you know what that is?
No, what is it?
It's honeysuckle.
Right, I thought it would be Cabernet, but okay.
No.
It is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, I didn't until I looked it up either.
No, there's some lovely names of places in Australia. Yeah. Wagga Wagga's, it must have had crows in the past, but these days it seems to have a lot of sulphur-crested cockatoos and galahs.
Okay.
They seem to be in plague proportions.
Yeah. A plague proportion.
Oh, there's a lot of them. When you open the landscape up and you plant things, sometimes you provide... a source of food for some of these birds. So,
yep.
Yeah. They're, both of those birds are very beautiful birds.
I bet they screech, though.
Oh, nice. Cockatoos make the most awful sound. Yeah, they do.
My dad lives in Esk, which is in Queensland, and the lovely birds, but in the morning, it is just awful.
Oh, they no, the cockatoos particularly do make an awful sound.
Yeah, yeah.
You would have heard a kookaburra.
Yeah, I think so, Mike.
The most beautiful bird sound in Australia is probably the magpie. That's, we have an Australian magpie, which is different to your magpie.
Okay.
And it warbles, or I think the technical term is it carols. It makes a beautiful sound.
Let's get on to Plumpton.
Sure.
We're talking about trees and birds. So you're now here in charge of Plumpton?
Yes, I have been for 8 days.
Eight days, yeah, really? 8 days.
I've made a lot of changes, Chris.
Yeah.
I've moved offices.
Yeah, no, that's the important thing, isn't it? Yeah, you've got a bigger office, have you?
No, different office.
Different office, okay. So just talking about what the syllabus is in Plumpton, because... The students are away at the moment, but you've got some sensory panels going on and all sorts of stuff. So do you want to just give us an overview of the sort of the main parts of Plumpton's wine?
Sure. We like to call Plumpton the centre of excellence for education, training and research for the UK wine industry.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of is describes what we do. So we do education, and we have three types of courses. We have a production course, which trains winemakers and viticulturalists.
You don't call them oleologists?
Well, no, we do. We do. But that course is a BSc, so it's a Bachelor of Science
mm-hmm.
in viticulture and enology.
Okay.
So that's probably our biggest course, training the next generation of winemakers.
How many
winemakers.
People would do that?
We have an annual intake of around about 30 these days. So across the 3 years, we would have probably 60-odd students.
Okay. So you what? And
maybe even 70.
And so what, 20, 25 graduate each year, is it?
Oh, yeah. Look, because you can exit after 2 years, mm-hmm. we have a bit of a fall off in third year.
Mm-hmm.
I think this year probably 12 to 15 graduated.
Yep.
So it could be anywhere from sort of 12 to 20.
Okay, so it's small classrooms, isn't it? Small.
That's
groups.
One of the nice things about coming to Plumpton. The size of the classes are fantastic.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I don't want to advertise this too much, but our student cohort is terrific. You know, our students, they all love wine. They're dedicated. They're enthusiastic. There's a whole range of ages. You know, we have students straight out of A-levels through to, someone in their late 60s. So we got a reasonably mature cohort, but they love wine. So So that we have a BSc in winemaking and viticulture. We have a BA, a Bachelor of Arts in Wine Business. So that's a smaller cohort. We have probably 30 to 40 across the 3 years of that degree.
Mm-hmm.
Business, marketing, sales. And the last type of course we have is we run a master's. So that's a level 7 course,
mm-hmm.
Master's of Enology and Viticulture.
Okay, how many people do that?
That's a smaller cohort. Last year we took our biggest ever intake. So we took 20 students last year into the first year.
Yep.
But it normally hovers around 12 to 15.
Okay. And that's just looking at winemaking and viticulture in a far more detail? Or
To do the master's, you don't have to have had a background in viticulture or wine, but you have to have had a background in science because there's a bit of chemistry and there's a bit of biology.
Yep.
So what the master's does is it fast-tracks someone who has a science background,
mm-hmm.
fast-tracks them in winemaking and managing grapevines.
Oh, okay.
But it's at a reasonably high theoretical level.
Yep.
So it's a high-level course. It's level 7.
Yep.
And it will involve a major research project.
Okay.
And those projects, they take place all over the place. We had projects in Tasmania last year. We've got various projects in Italy and France this year. So our master's students tend to go all over the place to do their research projects, which is fun. Some of them stay in the UK.
And how much of it is classwork versus project?
The first two semesters are essentially in the class.
Yep.
The project is the last semester, it's the third semester of the three, and that's a lot of that self-directed, but it's not all in the class. Like the master's does involve a reasonable amount of work out in the vineyard and in the winery,
yep.
in the experimental winery and in the commercial winery.
Okay.
So we try and give our master's students a bit of a practical grounding in the vineyard and in the winery.
What's the difference between the commercial and experimental winery? What's going on there?
Well, the commercial winery is, as I suggest, it's a commercial winery. So we make bottles of wine and we sell them.
Okay.
So it's a commercial enterprise, mm-hmm. And it's run like a commercial enterprise. So it would be like any commercial winery out there.
It is a proper business? Or?
Absolutely.
Yep.
So
I haven't seen Plumpton wine. I know about wines made at Plumpton.
Yeah.
But I've never seen them in the shelves or anything.
We walk through the winery. Yep. So I'll walk you back through the winery, and I'll also take you to the research winery.
Okay.
The research winery is a space that has a bit of kit. So a bit of kit to measure things. Things like controlled growth rooms where you can control temperature and light. And you make much smaller size, smaller scale wine.
Mm-hmm.
So you might make wine in demijohns. You might even make it in coffee plungers.
So coffee, like coffee.
Yeah, you can. You can actually do some ferments in a coffee plunger, and it's obviously not going to be a finished wine, but it will tell you about something about that winemaking process.
Okay.
So this is all about taking a particular part of winemaking and doing a bit of research on it.
Okay.
So it might be malolactic fermentation. It might be the initial ferment. It might be testing different strains of yeast. A whole lot of things, but the experimental winery is for making small amounts of wine that we can replicate, and we can play around with, and we can learn about something that we would want to eventually apply in the commercial winery.
Okay. Just on the commercial wine, the bulk of your vineyard, because you've got Plumpton's got their own vineyards.
Well, we have two vineyards. We have a vineyard at Rock Lodge, which 8 or 9 hectares. It's mm-hmm. got a fair few varieties on there.
Yeah.
So all of the fruit from Rock Lodge goes through our commercial winery.
Yeah.
Last year was a big year for all sorts of reasons. We put 36 tons through
mm-hmm.
last year. That's the biggest amount of fruit we've ever put through the winery. We have another vineyard at Ditchling, which is nearby.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 hectares. We only planted that last year. That's planted with the three big champagne varieties, so Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier and Chardonnay,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be our main vineyard for sparkling wine. We make about 8 wines here at Plumpton,
yep.
commercially. So we make a sort of a classic Brut, we make a sparkling Rosé, we make a Bacchus, we make a Rosé, we make a dry white, we make a dry red, we have an Ortega, sometimes we make a Pinot Noir, so yeah, we make about eight different wines.
And do the students do that, or?
The students do that under the supervision of the winemaker. So okay. We've got a pretty good winemaker here, Sarah Midgley, and she teaches the students commercial winemaking. They will help her make decisions. One of the things we do with those students is for some of our wines, we actually get them to have a go at blending,
yep.
and the particular blend that wins the contest actually gets made into the commercial wine. So they do have a role in winemaking, but it is under the tutelage of Sarah.
Just on blending, this will sound a bit silly, but it's not... Oh, people always talk about blending and this and that and how important it is to make wines. But to me, I always think of blending, it's got to be a compromise, because on the one hand, you could make the world's best blend, but then you have all these grapes that aren't being used because they didn't quite make the blend. So then you land up with all this excess grapes. What do? You sell them on the open market, or do you try and make another wine, or do you compromise the blend to use all your variety? Do you know what I mean?
You're talking about some commercial decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
And look, if you have a blend that you think is particularly fantastic, and you've got wine in tank, and you want to use some of this and some of that, you are going to have to find somewhere else to put the rest of your wine. So, that usually just goes into another wine style.
What do you like about viticulture?
Oh, I like plants. I've always loved plants. Yep. And that's why I worked in forestry. I love trees. Vineyards are nice. The grapevine is a fascinating plant for all sorts of reasons, the way it's evolved, the way we manage the reproductive process. The grape berry itself, it's actually a vehicle or a capsule for seed dispersal. So the way it's evolved is all about dispersing the seed.
Yep.
It's co-evolved with birds. So birds disperse grapevine seeds. And the kind of things that change in the grapevine, the berry, the change of colour,
mm-hmm.
the importation of sugar, various flavour and aroma compounds, it's all about signals to dispersers. So we have a sort of an ecological process that just happens to have delivered us something that we can make into wine. And sometimes the way that berry has evolved in terms of its ecology is beneficial for wine, and sometimes it's not so beneficial. So we're kind of managing this process.
Okay, that's interesting, because I always think colour is the signal to the birds that it's good to eat, and so they can be seen as well. The grapes aren't being hidden by the leaf foliage and all that sort of stuff. Sugars are clearly, you know, energy, so that's clearly something that as the sugars ramp up, as it ripens.
Yeah, what happens is when a berry goes through two phases, or they're really three phases, but the first phase is when it's green and hard, and the seed is not ripe. So the plant does not want a seed that's not going to germinate to be eaten.
Yeah.
So everything about that berry protects it from being eaten.
It discourages being
eaten. Yeah, it's very acidic. It's hard. It has a lot of methoxypyrazines, which we know are characters in certain wines.
Yeah.
It has...
Methoxypyrazines, they're the things that insect repellent as well, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, that methoxypyrazines are in Sauvignon Blanc. A lot of times we try to get rid of methoxypyrazines. You know, some people don't like the green notes, other people don't mind a bit of it. But everything about that green berry is about not being eaten. And when the seed is ready to germinate, there's a switch, and that's the French word for that is veraison.
Yep.
It's called the lag phase. So that's the second phase, and it's where the berry, there's genetics involved, there's hormones involved, but there's this switch, and all of a sudden the berry will soften, it will change colour, the acids will start to decline, and it will import sugar. So that's the nutritional reward. So the colour change, the sugar, the loss of acid, the softening of the berry, all sort of facilitate the seed being eaten and dispersed.
So as soon as you see your grapes change colour, you know that the seed is now a viable seed.
Yeah, absolutely. But we don't let our grapevines get to that sort of stage. We protect the fruit from being eaten, and we end up taking the grapes off probably much later than what birds would take them off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we wait for the right sort of sugar-acid balance.
Yeah.
So we wait till sugars get to a certain level, and we want acids to decline, but we don't want them to decline by too much. Because they're very important for preserving the wine and giving it age, giving it structure, all sorts of things. So the viticulturist and the winemaker, they're all about managing that process. And it's to do with acids and flavours and tannins and proteins and sugars and all of that sort of stuff.
And the third phase is the sugar.
The third phase is the ripening. I didn't explain that. That's when there's this importation of sugar.
Yeah.
When sugar's imported into the berry, water will follow that osmotically so that it continues to swell.
Mm-hmm.
That's all about the cells enlarging due to water following the sugar.
Excellent. All right then, Greg, I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Okay. I bored you a bit with berry development.
No, I actually find that's the most interesting bits for me. So that's the things I like. I'm not a scientist, but I'm an engineer, so I quite like that sort of thing, you know, understanding those sort of
things. I'm a scientist, but not an engineer, which used to annoy my father-in-law because he was an engineer.
Oh, okay. The big difference between scientists and engineers is a scientist wants to know the answer exactly, an engineer just wants to know roughly.
Absolutely. You guys have to do real stuff in the real world, so I get that.
Excellent. All right then, Greg. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chris.